Well, here we are.
So, this is the new studio.
Yep, this is it. Hopefully everyone gets here soon.
5 seconds later.
So, ideas for segments this week, anyone?
Reproduction with Toad! Oh yeah!
I don't know, but can I record with Samus?
I could make a cake!
Okay. How about we just talk about Diddy Kong Racing?
What about Mario Kart?
Oh, it's time to broadcast. People, Zach, quick, let's get on air.
All right.
It's connectivity. With Chat Retro, featuring Nick and Zach. What We've Been Playing, featuring Neil, Addison, and John. Episode 176, A Bunch of Muppets. Chat Retro, the retro chat show where we talk about retro games. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined by Zach Miller. Hey, Zach.
Howdy, howdy.
How's it going?
It goes okay. It's 52 degrees. It's warm today.
So today, Zach and I are going to be talking about Diddy Kong Racing on the Nintendo 64. I had never actually played this game back in the day all that much. I played a bit of multiplayer at a friend's house, so this was like a fresh all the way through the game. So, what's your history on it, Zach?
I got it when it first came out.
Right.
I really like it. I really liked it back in 1999 or 97, I guess, when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I beat it back then. And I've always kept the cart. But I haven't played it again until now for this feature.
Yep. I just wanted to go through some little bit of background information on the game, on a bit of its reception and how it was made from the good old Wikipedia. So the game was released on the 24th of November 97 in North America, the 14th of November in Japan, and the 21st of November in Europe, apparently. I don't know how accurate that is, but it seems like that was pretty close to a worldwide launch.
Yeah, it is.
Apparently, the game had started off as a Pro-Am 64 sequel from the NES, and it was Miyamoto that ended up throwing Diddy Kong into the mix. So, a little bit like the Star Fox thing with Dinosaur Planet.
Upending the tea table a little.
Yeah. It seems like Timba was going to be the main character of the original version of the game. The thing that surprises me from this information, though, is that apparently Miyamoto threw Diddy Kong into the mix in June 97. So they converted the game to Diddy Kong Racing in a matter of months before it came out.
Yeah.
So it's pretty tight schedule.
And honestly, like, when you look at the character select screen at the beginning of the game, Diddy's the one who looks the least thought out to me. He looks like he's just kind of, you know, because it's all these characters who are clearly rare characters, like Conker and Banjo and the Kremling. And then you got all these random characters, but then there's just Diddy Kong.
That would explain why, like, there was no, like, Donkey Kong character in it or any other sort of DK character. That basically, Diddy was the only one that made it in.
Yeah. And there are no, aside from maybe bananas that you collect, there are really no callbacks to the Donkey Kong series.
I hadn't actually really thought about that as I was playing it, but yeah, there's no, like, obvious DK level in the game.
No.
All sort of just random themes and stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, well, let's move on to talking about how we played the game right now. So, Zach, you were playing it How are you playing it on the original system with?
I'm playing it on my N64 with an HDTV, and it looks terrible.
Yeah,
51-inch plasma. Good lord.
Jeez.
You know, it's funny when you brought this game up, and I said let's do it. I briefly considered going to a, you know, a secondhand store and buying a CRTV.
Wow.
just for this, because I knew how it would look on my TV.
Yep.
And maybe I should have done that. but I think shrunken down, the game actually does still look pretty good. Mm. I think it looks better than Mario Kart 64. And I actually tested this. I went back to Mario Kart 64, and it looks really bad now. Really bad. And it has frame rate issues, and the pop-in is just god-awful in Mario Kart 64. This game doesn't really have a lot of pop-in.
Hmm, yeah.
It's shocking.
A lot of the courses seem to have a lot of fairly good curves, though, so I think it hides it just out of
sight.
That's
true, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, this game was like what a couple of years later or whatever, so yeah. It's no real big surprise, and Rareware pretty much technical wizards.
That's true. And this, I don't think this game required the expansion pack.
No, the expansion pack hasn't even come out yet, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get an N64 till late 99, so I can't really remember, but I'm pretty sure it launched with DK64.
I think you're right. You are correct, yeah.
I was playing it on a Sony PVM broadcast like monitor, like CRT monitor. So a year or so ago, I went through the sort of the trouble of getting a like NTSC RGB N64. So I've got it hooked up like pretty much the optimal way you can like view it these days.
Right.
aside from going through like getting a like a scaling unit, like the XRGB Mini and stuff like that. You may have heard of it.
I have not, but that sounds nice.
Yeah, you can pretty much get this scaling box that will take the RGB out of the modded N64 and scale it to either 720 or 1080p.
Oh, wow.
My friend got one recently, like the other day, and I went around and had a look. And after a little bit of tweaking, it looked pretty much the same as what I was used to on my CRT. It's like...
Nice.
Yeah. So that's sort of the way to go if you really want to get into N64, because the main reason I went with... like I've gone down this sort of rabbit hole of getting all the N64 stuff recently is because, you know, licensing and that isn't going to make it possible to play a lot of these games so in the future. Mm. So anyway, that's a little quick aside there. Yeah, I started this game maybe a month and a half ago or whatever and just sort of started chipping away at it. I'd played like a few levels and then put it down. So I'll come back to this later. That was about a year and a half ago.
Mm.
So I finally sat down and started playing through the whole game. And now that I've like finished it, I like it quite a lot. I got pretty addicted to it. I've even beaten all the time trials and unlocked the TT like clock character. So I've completely finished the game now. And it's really fun. I was a little bit hesitant to sort of dive right into it because over the years on like message boards and things, people have been saying like they hated the silver coin challenges and it was like the game was really hard. And aside from every now and then I would get sort of stuck on a particular challenge or level for like a little bit. I wouldn't say it was like overly difficult to overcome the game.
No, and I don't think the silver coin things are that bad.
You know, they're pretty much all in the path of like where you'd go. There is some that sort of are off to the side a bit, but none that are you're not going to notice.
Yeah.
The hardest thing with those, I guess, is just sort of planning your run. So you may, some courses I was trying to get every single one on my first lap and then use the next two laps to sort of get up into first.
Make sure you win.
Make sure I win, yeah. And there was some where it was easier to get like half on the first lap and half on the second and try and win on the third lap and stuff. But
yeah.
Did you get to play any of the silver coins on your current run?
Yeah, I played all the silver coins on the first three courses. Mm-hmm. The lake, what are the first three?
The dinosaur
jungle,
land.
The lake, the dinosaur. Yeah. And none of them are hard. I mean, there was, I think, one where I had to actually look for one or two of the coins. But, it's not the Boneyard. The Boneyard had a few where I actually had to look for a few of the coins because they were kind of on an almost alternate route from where I'd normally go. But, I mean, it's not hard. It's it makes you more familiar with the course, which is fine. And, it's not difficult, and it's a good challenge. You know, it's odd to say this, but I feel like more racing games could have things like this.
Yeah, it definitely does make you have to be really knowledgeable of how the track goes and sort of the best possible route to take and all that.
Yeah. And none of the tracks are very long.
No, I was...
So it's not a big deal to go back and try again.
I was surprised with that, too. There's only a few tracks that are like sort of more lengthy. That was one thing that Mario Kart 64 sort of has over this game, I guess, is like the tracks are more substantial,
right?
I think. But the tracks in Diddy Kong are still pretty fun.
Yeah, they are. I'd kind of like to play this multiplayer. I wonder how it holds up in terms of multiplayer.
I actually played some multiplayer briefly a couple weeks ago with some friends, and it was pretty good. Like, the battle arenas I quite like in this game, actually. They're outside of Mario Kart 64. These are some of the most fun ones I've played in, like, recent years.
Now, I did not like... Of the three vehicles, I don't really like the plane. I think the plane controls a little sluggishly.
I don't mind the plane. It is a little slow feeling, maybe. But the one that was sort of most annoying to for me was the hovercraft. It was it's much more floaty and twitchy a bit.
Yeah, it's a little slippery.
You've got to really get used to how it moves.
Yeah.
And you really...
I'm not...
You really do have to use the sharper turning on that.
Oh, definitely.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that's what it must be for, because if you use the... If you try and slide turn on the car, you'll often turn way too sharply.
Mm.
I found.
It is useful sometimes. On the sort of the wider corners that you go around, I usually use the drift on the cart around them.
Yeah.
It's easier to collect bananas along the edge of a track.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah.
Mm. So
here's a question for you that I couldn't figure out. What the heck do bananas do?
They're like the coins in Mario Kart. They race
top
speed.
You go a little faster?
Yeah. There's 10 bananas gives you the highest top speed.
Gotcha, okay.
Also, I played through half the game before I got to something where I was struggling a bit to win. And then I looked up some strategies for how to play the game. And I didn't realize that when you go over the boost pads, you have to take your finger off the accelerator to get the to get the maximum boost. And after that, it was much easier because they expect you to know that. In some of the boss battles, it's like the Whizpig fight. I was struggling on the last Whizpig fight for a while, and then I realized that I wasn't letting go of the accelerator for long enough, and it was shortchanging me on the boost.
Yeah.
So what you got to do is you let go of the accelerator as you go over the boost pad, and then you don't push it down again until the colored smoke stops coming out of your exhaust. And then you put it back down. It's actually quite a long time, before you put the A button back down.
Huh. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there's the course that I'm on that I really dislike, and I've only been playing this for 4 or 5 days. I really do not like the Snowflake Mountain course where it's kind of Christmas-themed and you're going up and down a lot.
Is that the one where it has boost pads that sort of take you up on vertical angles
yes,
and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just because it's hard to see where you're going. And so you're going up this long hill, and then all of a sudden there's a turn at the top of it, and you can't really see what's going on, so you end up hitting the wall.
Yeah.
I don't like that course. I know that's probably the only Snowflake Mountain course like that, but I remember playing it made me remember, God, I didn't like this back in 1997 either. So that has not improved. But I really like that the Snowflake Mountain course, courses in particular, they're all very different, but they're all obviously unified by a theme.
Yeah,
and it's the same way in Dino Domain.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's the same way in Sherbet Island, from what I remember.
Pretty much, but yeah.
I do like that. First of all, there are a lot of courses.
There's
in
like
this game.
20 courses.
Yeah. I think that's more than Mario Kart 64.
There's four cups in Mario 64 with four tracks in each of them.
Four each. Yeah, so yeah, there are more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do like that. And I think they're more, a little more varied. I mean, even though they each have a unified theme, I think the track design is pretty varied between them.
Yeah. And the I actually really like the playing the levels in the Snowland because it's like, I don't know, with all the Rareware snow stuff, it always feels so, like, yeah, Christmassy and
happy.
The way that they have the snow, like, it's always this pale blue color, and
yeah,
it always looks really good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, they do a good job. And there aren't. And one of the things that strikes me about the graphical presentation is that, unlike, you know, I keep comparing this Mario Kart 64 because I think that's the closest comparison.
Mm-hmm.
In Mario Kart 64, the characters are sprites.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this game, they're actually 3D. And I really, one of the strangest things I really like about this game is backing up in the cart because your character kind of turns.
Yeah.
And he looks back. And it's bizarrely well animated. Although it's annoying that you have to actually hold down on the stick. He doesn't just start backing up when you press hold down B.
Right. Yep.
But yeah, that's a cute feature that they added.
The other so in this game, the sort of the progression is like you go to the levels first off, and you just the only mission is to win. And then after you do all the tracks there, you go and do the silver coin challenges, right?
Right, right.
And then after that, you can find a key in one of the levels in that world and unlock, like, the trophy race or something. Is that how?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the trophy race is pretty much just Mario Kart 64's main mode.
Yeah, it's like an, well, point, it's like an AI.
It's like points-based.
An AI yeah. battle mode.
Oh, sorry, the key unlocks the mini game, doesn't it?
Right.
And then there's like another thing where it's like Mario Kart where you gotta get the like all the win the by points and get the trophy.
Right.
So yeah, there's a fair bit of variety within like each world. Like to completely finish a world it like takes a while. It's not just finishing the tracks once.
And then I believe correct me if I'm wrong, I probably am, it's been so long, but don't you unlock the clock guy by doing a bunch of time trials?
Yeah, yeah. You have to beat you have to play the time trial and beat a prerequisite time, which you don't know what it is. And then the clock will come out. Like you play it again, and the clock will challenge you. Like his ghost will challenge you, and you got to beat him on every single level. And then you'll unlock him as a playable character.
Yes.
And he is way overpowered.
Oh, is he?
Because in this game, once you beat it, I think once you just beat the regular game, see the credits, you unlock Adventure 2. It's like a harder mirror mode version of the whole game. So I played a bit of him on that, and I didn't even have to try to beat the AI. I was like beating them by half a track on the first,
oh wow,
all the first world levels and stuff. But it'll probably get harder, but he's really fast.
How do you unlock the rooster? I don't think I ever did that when I was little.
You have to go into, I'm not sure when you can do it, but you have to go into the main area, like where Taj is. and there's a frog with a rooster thing on it or something, and you run it over.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, and you unlock him. Yeah.
Oh, geez. You probably do that right away.
Probably. I'm not sure if there's like a... You have to get through a certain amount of the game first.
Oh, okay.
Because I did it right... Like, I'd already finished the game when I found out about it.
Gotcha.
Because like there was also a bunch of like cheats in this game. You can unlock like a two-player adventure mode.
What?
Yeah, there's one of the magic codes you can input is like the adventure mode in two-player.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And oh,
there's like,
wow.
There's like giant carts and like all sorts of. It's sort of like some of the cheats are like GoldenEye, how you can sort of just do some wacky things with it.
I'm gonna have to look this stuff up.
So you can just find all the codes on GameFAQs and stuff, and you just gotta sit there typing them in.
Yeah. Now I remember there was going to be an actual sequel to this game. I think Barrel Blast was supposed to be a sequel. I know the early screenshots of that game had the elephant genie.
Yeah, the Space World 2001 I think had a CG video showing off like Donkey Kong racing. And it was like the Donkey Kong characters riding animals and stuff.
Yes, that's right.
And it was being made by Rare, but you know, after they went to Microsoft, the game got cancelled. And early on in the Wii, there was like some other developer did that Barrel Blast game, but I didn't really play too much of that.
Yeah, me neither. But I know that this game got remade on the DS, and I've always been curious.
I wanted to talk a bit about that as well. Like, I had played a bit of the DS game, but they did change some things. Like, obviously, Banjo and Conker were taken out, and I think Tiny Kong and one of the other Kongs was added. They also added a track editor, which is like you drew like a shape on the touchscreen, and it would translate that to a level. I think they did a bunch of like rebalancing and like just changing little bits and pieces here. They even changed Taj's voice, like things.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah. And
I don't know why, but I really like his voice.
Yeah, me too. He's like, I think he's just got a standard American accent in the DS1.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's no good.
It takes away a bit of the personality, I think.
Yeah, it really does.
I think most people say that the DS1, like, really the only sort of good improvement was the more stable frame rate. But some of the other stuff they did sort of take away from the game overall.
Oh, no, I could stand to have a... You know, the frame rate's not bad. Maybe it's just exacerbated by my TV.
Yeah, even I, on my CRT, I had to, like, adjust. Like, I'm usually pretty good with, like, not really being bothered by frame rates on the N64. But in this game, a couple of levels, it did sort of bother me for a while. But I think I'm over that now, because I can play it now. If I went down and played it now, I wouldn't really mind that much. But when I first started playing it, some levels were really bad. I thought the snow one with the village, the mountain village one.
Yeah, I know
that one has
an
awful frame rate when you're playing it with like just with all the other races on the screen.
Yeah,
it's not so bad in Time Trial, but when there's like all the other carts on the screen, it really takes a dive.
Yeah, it's because it's already got so much going on in the background already.
Yeah, the worst part of the level is the very beginning where you just round that corner and then you go down the hill and you got like the bridge, you got the houses down the like in the bottom of the valley, and it just like really choppy.
Yeah, really chugs.
Yeah, the going back to the DS game quickly.
Well, if I ever saw it at like a GameStop or something, I'd probably pick it up just because I'm curious about it.
Mm.
You know, it's I mean, the core game, the original game, really is a lot of fun, even though it may have aged poorly in some respects. I think it's a really well-made kart game, and this is what I forgot to say earlier. It, you know, probably inspired Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Yeah, at least to some degree it would have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought some of the levels would have featured some of the other like modes of like the plane and the hovercraft a bit more. Like the standard,
yeah.
A lot of the tracks still have the standard cart as the main vehicle that you have to use.
Yeah, very few stages let you pick a vehicle.
And then when
you can, there's usually an optimal vehicle for that course.
Yeah, like on the plane ones, I've never chosen like the cart or the hovercraft to play as instead.
Right.
Because the plane's the best, just the best for that level.
Yeah.
The music in this game is also really catchy.
It is. You know, I don't think about it while I'm playing it, but you're right. It is good music.
There's actually in one of the snow levels, there's actually like a tune within the main song that I'm pretty sure is like from something else, but I can never place it. I was sitting there for ages listening to it going, what is that? It's like
I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's really annoying. And I even went to look it up online and I couldn't find anyone else saying that. So maybe I'm imagining it, but yeah. So that's pretty much Diddy Kong Racing, I think.
I think it's a great game. I honestly do. And I'm going to keep playing it. I've got the N64 out now. I think I'm going to keep it that way for a while.
That's good. There is a lot of tiny details in this game with like how to race and stuff. Like I was saying before with the way the boosting works and all that. There's lots of little things like that that will like help you improve like your control over the kart and little bits and like little tricks that you can do to like get ahead.
Yeah, you've got me curious now. I'm going to go look some of this stuff up. I feel like I knew that back when I played it when I was little, the boost thing. But
They probably do mention it somewhere, at least in the instruction booklet, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe not to the extent of telling you about the clouds and that. They might just tell you, take off the accelerator when you go over a boost, but they don't elaborate on how long for and stuff like that. Which is sort of a thing in the N64 days. Like, you'd have even Nintendo games that would say, oh, yeah, do this. But then there'd be, like, a third extra step that you could do to, like, make it a little bit better again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even drifting in Mario Kart 64 got, you know, you could either just hold it down or you could mess with the stick to make it less or more of a tight turn. And then you could you could go back and forth with the stick until your smoke turned blue or red or whatever it was, mm-hmm. and then release for a little turbo. So it's a fairly complicated maneuver.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to explain to somebody. So I feel like there's probably a lot of that kind of hidden depth in this game that I need to refamiliarize myself with.
Yeah, definitely. Especially on the, you probably won't beat the final boss Whizpig without knowing this stuff, because you have to hit every single boost pad and pretty much you have to do the proper way of boosting to do it. I only just beat him when I was doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, he's hard.
Huh.
Okay, well, I think that'll do it for Chat Retro today, Zach.
Yeah.
Thanks for
joining. Have an idea of what we should do next?
I don't know. I'm not sure if this segment's going to appear every single episode of Connectivity that we put out.
Oh, of course, sure.
Maybe we'll leave it a few weeks or we'll plan. I was thinking maybe DK64 because I do have that. I've never played that before.
I just got it on the Wii U.
Yeah, I've got the N64
cart sitting
there. It's a painful
game.
I've never played it, so I need to sort of experience it a bit, I think.
You do. I think everybody needs to play it. Everybody who's a Nintendo platforming game fan needs to play the game. And some people like it. I mean, they really do. I'm just not one of those people, but I think I liked it back in the day. But we've come so far.
Well, DK64 is, what, 16 years old now? Close to it?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's scary.
Okay, well, we'll decide on what we're going to play next, and next time we talk about a retro game, you'll hear it here on Connectivity.
Cool.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Banjo.
This is a Nintendo News Flash. There have been reports of a large number of cattle mutilations recently at the Long Long Ranch. Farmers have no idea what the cause could be, but one passerby managed to see something strange hovering above the paddock late last night. We now cross to our on-the-scene reporter, Link. Link, what's happening down there? Uh-huh. Oh, I see. Yes. It is quite disturbing, isn't it? Wow, what a story. Now, that's it for the Nintendo News Flash.
And welcome to What You've Been Playing here on Connectivity. I'm your host for this segment, Neil Ronahan, and joining me today to talk about new Wii U and 3DS. Now it's pretty much just 3DS games and like a one Wii U game and like maybe some PS4 games if we get that far, and Vita, I don't know. But joining me to talk about some games, John Raritan.
Hello.
And Addison Webb. John, you've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles 3D.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
So it is, of course, I'll just go ahead and give the information for anyone who's been disassociated with Nintendo for the past few years. It is, of course, the remake of the Wii RPG, almost didn't come out in America, game Xenoblade. And so now it has several less pixels, which is a bit jarring at first. The game is definitely way more ugly on the 3DS.
I think the appropriate term for how it looks on the new 3DS is like butt.
There's definitely some butt going on. you do adapt to the butt. Like I hardly ever notice the butt anymore. But it
is. Yeah, I mean after a few hours, the butt just becomes a part of your everyday life and you live with the butt.
Yes. But yeah, the first time you kind of zoom out from your character at all and you realize that you can't see their face because the resolution on the 3DS is what, like 240, I think, as compared to the Wii, which is 480. I mean, it's literally like half the resolution. So you lose a lot of detail, and it does definitely take some getting used to. And it doesn't help that the game has absolutely no anti-aliasing on it, so jaggies everywhere.
That's what it looked like in the Wii version, too.
Sure, it's just in the Wii version, you had twice the pixels, so those jaggies weren't quite so up in your face.
Yeah, and the draw distance in that was incredible. And that's the one thing that in the 3DS one, like, you don't have that wow moment when you get to Gar Plains, I feel, in the new 3DS one.
Geometrically, you can see about as far, but the details don't really load in. And yep. So you're kind of just looking at a vague green blob. I know this is all sounding very negative, but
the game's awesome. It's regardless like of have, whether, regardless right. of how it looks, that game's great.
Right. This is still an amazing game, and seeing it on a handheld, even if it's not perfect, it's still a great way to play the game. And it's still way cheaper than $80 or whatever dumb price I paid for the Wii version was. and I mean, when you compare it to, the last big Vita game I was playing was Borderlands 2, which is another big open world RPG. And that game looks...
got downported.
Yeah, that game looks and runs like really big butt. Whereas Xenoblade
like
is...
like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. Xenoblade is
That's
just...
That's the thing with Xenoblade Chronicles on 3DS is that it runs really well. It just looks bad.
Right. And I think that if you have never played the Wii version, which a lot of people haven't because there just aren't that many copies of it in the universe, apparently.
Yeah.
If you haven't played that, then I don't know if you would notice as much how bad it looks, just because you wouldn't have that, like the Wii version looked incredibly good for a Wii game.
Yeah.
The 3DS version probably still looks really good for a 3DS game. I'm just comparing it to the Wii game. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. Well, actually, no, because I think comparing it to something like, I don't know, Monster Hunter 4, like, Xenoblade Chronicles 3D still looks really bad on new 3DS.
The difference being that Monster Hunter 4, you're exploring these tiny little areas. Like, yeah, it's technically kind of an open world-ish thing, but
yeah,
it's constantly loading a new area, whereas Xenoblade is giving you these, like, almost Elder Scrolls size areas to explore. And so if it wants to look a little pixely, it can go ahead and look a little pixely.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Now, let's start focusing on what the game plays like, because the game is a super, super fun real-time RPG.
Sure. Yeah, the combat, I would say, is most similar to, like, an MMORPG, but it feels a lot more involved. You have your basic auto attack just once you get near enough to an enemy and decide to battle them. And then there's also various arts you can perform, and they will have various effects on the enemies, and will also... They have different effects depending on where you are in relation to the enemy, which makes the battles a lot more active. So, like,
yeah,
some attacks...
Yeah, you have to, like, move around to different sides of the enemy and maybe try to avoid having, you know, being in the same area as some of your computer-controlled teammates.
Right, because...
So that way you all don't get hurt.
Right, and that's the thing, is you have... It's an interesting concept, because by default, when you're playing as Shulk, the main character, you are not the strongest character on your team. Ryan is essentially a tank character, and so yeah. When you're fighting, he draws most of the aggro. And so kind of the basic concept is you get the enemy concentrating on him, and then you sneak around and attack them from the back.
And it's backslash, as Smash Brothers players will know,
right,
is a devastating move from Shulk.
And especially if you actually do it when you're behind the guy, in which case you'll get extra bonus damage.
Yep.
So yeah, it's like an MMORPG combat system, but super involved and super active. It doesn't feel like you're waiting on cooldowns and auto attacking. It feels like a very, very active real time combat.
Yeah.
And also, it's a fantastic story. Music is friggin' beautiful. You get the delightful British voice actors and all the European localization as well, because now that this game is hugely popular, we still can't spell color the way we would in the United States. But, you know, it's fine. You get used to it.
So how far are you right now?
I am only 10 hours in. I've been going slow. I went slow through the first area and got myself really leveled up. I was also, because I was pre-aware that a certain character would leave my party early on, I was ready to steal all of their armor right before that scene happened, so that they wouldn't steal all my best armor like they did when I played through it on the Wii.
Yeah, that's a big bummer.
Yeah. Well, and then I was watching somebody else's Let's Play and realized that, like, everyone was doing the same exact thing. And so then I didn't feel as much like a creep for having that scene happen with a certain character in their underwear.
Now that we're lightly dancing around some spoilers, I really enjoyed finally playing through Xenoblade, because I'd put about 20 hours into the Wii version and then played and reviewed the 3DS version, which you can read that review over in NintendoWorldReport.com. And I really enjoyed it, and I think I'm kind of burnt out on playing that kind of game for when Xenoblade Chronicles X comes out. So I think I might have went from being very eagerly anticipating to Xenoblade Chronicles X to being like, it could slip to 2016. I won't be bothered.
I'm still really... I freaking can't wait for... If Legend of Zelda were still coming out this year, then I wouldn't mind waiting for X. But without Zelda, X needs to be here, like, now to just... To fill
well, it's
that
gonna be in Japan in like
heart.
A week.
right? And that's...
it's the end of April is when it comes out.
Yeah.
But let's throw it over to the quiet Addison Webb. So you've been playing Codename Steam, I hear.
I have. I'm about on the fourth, area of the game.
Is it like the fourth chapter or?
Yeah, chapter is probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, because I finally cracked open that game, but I only got as far as I got in the demo. So.
Oh, okay. So
I'm in chapter 2. Just through the
intro parts.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So first off, I never play strategy games. I kind of avoid them at all costs, but I was kind of looking for something to play, and this was actually on sale at Best Buy for $35, and I have the Gamers Rewards unlocked, and I got it for $27. So I thought that was a pretty good deal for, a month old now, 3DS game, and I heard that the patch solved a lot of the problems. So when I got it, I was playing on my 2DS, which isn't the greatest experience. I was aiming with the stylus. It's a strategy game where you're playing in like a third person. If you ever played Valkyria Chronicles on the PS3 or PC, it's the same thing. You take your turn and you move your character around third person. You can aim your shots and stuff. So using the stylus to do my shot aiming was pretty rough. So between that and the only twice speed fast forward, I finally got the push I needed to get a new 3DS. So
you can use the face buttons to control the shots.
Yeah, I noticed that after I got the new 3DS, but
you're weak.
I still like using the control stick better, but
yeah, but it is way better. But
I did get my new 3DS for $150.
Where'd you get
used.
It?
Used.
Oh, okay.
I got it at a mom and pop shop. All used. Right. And I got 70 trade on my 2DS. Not so bad. No,
it's a good deal.
$80 for new 3DS. I'll take it. And I also am the one person who probably used Marth in this game.
Oh, I still haven't done that yet. How did that work? Like, is it like smooth to do?
Yeah, when you get to a certain point in the game where you have control over your party, it's like, hey, we have this new technology called Amiibo. Like, if you'd like to take advantage of it, go ahead and tap an Amiibo from the Fire Emblem games on your 3DS. And I was like, okay, here's my Marth. So you just swipe it, like, when you're choosing your party. And apparently it's supposed to go away when he dies and you have to re-tap it, but I haven't had that problem yet. So I've just been strolling along with them. It's weird because you're playing with all ranged characters in the game, and you're throwing in these Fire Emblem characters. I only have the Marth. I don't have an Ike.
Yeah, and the other two aren't available yet, Robin and Lucina.
Yeah, which is kind of frustrating because it's like I'm the one person in the world who really like an Ike to use it for its in-game purposes only, really.
I know, isn't that the worst? But how many of those Ikes are probably just in boxes on some motherfucker's...
The rest of them are not being played with right now on somebody's collector's shelf in their basement, but
you do realize that all of those people listen to this podcast.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, that was intentional.
Play with your toys like a real adult. But yeah, so back to the whole strategy with using the Amiibo characters. There's points where I'm like, yeah, there's this one level where there's two stories to this one building that's right next to the main battlefield. So strategy wise, you want to get people up with range weapons shooting down while you have some of your shorter range people going in fighting this boss that you have to take down. And I, the first couple times I tried that was with Marth, and I'm like, well, this isn't working very well. So I pulled him out and put in one of the regular characters in the game, and I ended up beating it. But then the next mission, I put him back in. He worked out great. So
just wrecking dudes. It's kind left of a right.
hit or miss. Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. It's one of the better uses of Amiibo, I guess I would say. The bad part is they're the hardest to find Amiibos.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So not a whole lot of people get to use it, and the people who have the amiibos probably don't want to use them. So that's kind of frustrating. But I mean, as far as the game itself goes, I'm having a whole lot of fun with it. I definitely see why it would have been terrible before that patch.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there waiting and seeing nothing, really. So it's been a good baseball season game, because, you know, I'll play my turn. And then when the Nationals are up to bat, I'll watch, and then all the enemy moves will be way past gone, and I can make my next move. So it's working well for that. It's hard, especially for somebody who doesn't play a lot of strategy games, but I don't think it's, like, unbearable like a lot of the reviews
said. It's just challenging.
Yeah, it's like, usually I'll, like, realize something I'm doing wrong, like using a melee character against ranged characters is probably pretty dumb, or, hey, maybe I shouldn't have, like, rushed with one character and held everybody back, and I should, like, keep everybody together. So it's, you learn from your mistakes. It does a good job of teaching you. It's perfectly wacky and crazy, just like I like. I mean, Abraham Lincoln leading a secret strike team.
He has a mech suit. It's so dumb.
It's incredible.
Dumb or awesome?
Awesomely dumb. If you've been going to this site for a long time, I think that I've had many a headline and article in which I'm like, that's so dumb. And when I say that, I actually mean it's amazing. Like, all of Hyrule Warriors, my review could probably be summed up being like, this is the dumbest game ever, and I can't stop playing.
And the art style is really cool, too.
I love the way it looks. In 3D as well. Like, it's a really distinct visual game, and I like that about it.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, there's a lot out there for people who like those types of games, or for people like me who are afraid of those games, and just picking it up, I mean, I think it does a really good job of not, like, tutorialing you to death, but, like, teaching you how to play the game through your mistakes.
Yeah.
So, it's, honestly, it's my game of the year right now for Nintendo platform, or for any platform, considering my other platform games are ancient games for other platforms. But yeah, it's my game of 2015 so far, so I've been very pleased.
Well,
especially for something I paid $27 for.
Yeah, I still need to play more of it before I kind of see where it settles on my list of games. I'm surprised Majora's Mask 3D isn't at the top of your list.
It's just one of those things where it's a remake.
Yeah,
right. Can you compare other games to Majora's Mask? It's just like, here's perfection, here's everything else. Like,
it's not game of the year, it's just game of life.
Well, what is a game that I think might be shockingly moving up the ranks for my game of the year list is Ultimate Angler, one of the new Street Pass games. I cannot get enough of this dumb fishing game. Which, as previously stated, dumb kind of means awesome. So in Ultimate Angler, it's a Street Pass game in which when you Street Pass people, you get bait. And then the people come out with you on your boat to go fishing. And you go to different islands that each have, like, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 6 fishing spots. And then you fish. And the way the fishing is done is very simple. I just, you know, pick your bait, cast it out there, tap A when they bite, and then you hook them, and then you have to reel them in by either using the touchscreen and moving a reel with the stylus, or using the circle pad and, like, cycling it back. But there's kind of, like, a give and take, because you can't do it too much or else then your line will snap. So, but you don't want to let them go too far, because then you'll lose the fish. But it has a really nice, like, kind of relaxing gameplay loop. It kind of makes me want to track down Fishing Resort, which was the game that was made by the same people who made the Street Pass game. Fishing Resort was a game published by Xseed on the Wii that was developed by Propay, which is Sonic co-creator Yuji Naka's new studio. And by new studio, I think it's been around for, like, 10 years. But they also did Ultimate Angler. I think Propay also did Monster Manor as well, from the last batch of Street Pass games. Have either of you guys played any of the new Street Pass games?
I got the double pack. You can either buy them separately for $4.99, I think, or you can pay $7.99.
Yeah, or $6.99 if you bought any of the old Street Pass games.
Okay, I hadn't. But, yeah, I bought it for,
Battleground Z is the name of the zombie game.
Like you, Neil, I'm also finding much joy in Ultimate Angler.
Yeah, like, and I've been burning through my play coins with this game.
Yeah, I love how the cats are the fishers when you use play coins, and you just have a bunch of cats helping you fish. And if you're catching a big fish, they'll, like, hold on to the line with you, which is hilarious. But
have you gotten a fishing frenzy yet?
No.
Okay, so what happens with that is, I don't know if it's, like, specific areas or if it's just random, but, like, it'll happen near the, when, like, you, I think it's when you run out of bait, and it'll just be that, like, all of the people that you have with you on the touch screen, you just tap them as quickly as you can, and then you catch fish. So, like, I think when I did that, I wound up catching, like, 20 fish.
Dang.
It was wonderful.
One thing I noticed is how all the NPCs in this game's heads are shaped like fish. Like the girl's, like, hairdo looks like a shrimp tail, and her dad looks like one of those fish with, like, the light.
Yep.
That, whatever they're called, I'm not a biologist.
I forget what the name of those fish are. The deep sea guys.
Yeah. So, I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really relaxing, as fishing should be.
On the other hand, Battleground Z, the other new Street Pass game, is, as you put it before recording, Addison, it's basically just a Musou game. I was honestly surprised when I booted that up and then I had direct control over a Mii. And also the fact that you're controlling your Mii and you're fighting fucking zombies. Like, and the best are, like, what the weapons are. And I know, so far, I haven't played as much Battleground Z, but, I mean, it is a thing where you have to go and kill zombies, and sometimes there are goals that you have to do while killing zombies. Like, I had to collect 4 tires, and then another one, I just had to kill a bunch of zombies. But the weapons that you use to kill them are based on the people that you street pass their hobbies. So, I've played with a Wii remote that, when you swing it, it turns into a sword. And then you have, like, you basically do a Zelda spin attack as its special attack. I also played with a bowling ball for people who like sports. And then you just, you hold the bowling ball and you basically just, like, do the bowling motion but don't let go of it. And your special attack is basically, like, you bowl a strike. And then what was the other one that I got? Oh, a boombox for people who like music. And that you use the power of sound to damage the zombies, and you can shoot out big sound waves as your special attack. Because, Addison, you were talking about there's a tablet that you get as well.
Yeah, it's for people whose hobbies, like, browsing the web, and, like, you're swiping off web pages at the zombies, and then the special attack for that is you, like, order a package online, it gets airlifted and falls on the zombies and kills them. There's also, like, a pillow that you beat the zombies with, and then the special attack is you, like, go to sleep and you start counting sheep, and the sheep come down and kill the zombies. Like, there's just a lot of funny stuff going on there.
It's just so much fun. Like, I wish this wasn't a Street Pass game. I wish this was a full eShop release.
I think Nintendo and Ubisoft should get together and make, like, a family-friendly zombie you. Make it zombie me.
Zombie.
Yeah. And just have, like, the same mechanics and use your Miis to beat up cute little zombies with everyday items.
Yeah, and for people who are curious, Battleground Z was made by Goodfeel, who they are also, I would assume they're probably just about done development on Yoshi's Woolly World, and they also did Mii Force from the last batch of Street Pass games. So I wonder if, I forget, what was it? I forget who did the other two. I think Grezzo did one of the other Street Pass games. I wonder if the other two teams that worked on the Street Pass games, if they are working on anything and are on other ones that we might see before the end of the year or something like that. But who knows? I think these games are really special, and I can't wait to Street Pass more people, build up more play coins, and get farther into them. It's also great that there's new hats. And I even bought the stupid VIP thing.
Yeah, so can you go into that a little bit?
I don't even freaking know. It's like you collect people's birthdays, and I think if you get a bunch of birthdays, you get more plaza tickets, which I don't really want to admit this, but that's part of the reason why I was like, yeah, I'll just spend the $5 on it.
Pay the win that makes you work.
Yeah. and there's also other things like you can store Miis as VIPs. And I think there was another thing that you can do. You can change the music of it. That might be just with the new update. I don't know. I'm curious to see if anything else develops from this VIP premium thing, because it seems very dumb, and I feel stupid for spending money on it.
It's okay. It was for research.
Yeah, sure.
You're just a professional journalist.
Yep. So that's the Street Pass games. Let's go back around for another round of what you've been playing. John, you've been playing that Wii U eShop game Underground. I'm curious about this.
Yeah, so I came across this game in some random press release around Christmas. And I was reading about this game that had developed out of a surgery training tool, and decided right then and there that I needed to play that game. over at 8 Worlds, when the review copy came in, I immediately nabbed it. Underground is a game about where you play as a robot who is lost in a mine along with a young girl named Sari, I don't know, S-A-R-I.
I don't know how it's pronounced.
But you, essentially at the beginning of the game, you get into this big exosuit type thing. And so you are looking down on the levels from above with two giant arms reaching down into the level. And each of these arms can be equipped with a tool. You can grab things, you can drill into things, you can zap things. And each of these arms is controlled with the analog sticks. You use the tool with the L and R buttons. You can also rotate the arms with the ZL and ZR buttons. So you have very precise controls over these arms. There is a controller for the game that simulates a laparoscopy
or something.
Laparoscope. I don't know. My wife knows how to say it. How to say it, but she's asleep, so I can't ask her. So you're essentially looking down at this level that it almost reminds me of like a 3D Lemmings game. So you're finding all these robots and trying to get them through this mine area and to this exit. And you do this by occasionally you'll have to like drill the robots out because they've like had rocks collapse on them or something. And then you gather up scrap metal that's laying around or buried in rocks. You take that to a smelter, and that allows you to build objects like bridges and stairs and elevators. And so you essentially build a path through this area for the robots to take. It's awesome. The first half hour that I was playing it, I was like, this game is a freaking 9 or 10. Like, this is awesome. and then I got to the first boss fight.
Oh, no.
And so it was going fine. You're guiding your robots across this bridge, and there are these tentacle arms that are trying to smash the robots, and so you have to use your tools to fight off the tentacle arms and then kind of zap your robots to tell them when to go when it's safe. I died on my first attempt, and so it restarted, but the robot's AI didn't work anymore, and so rather than waiting for me to tell them when to go, they just freaking bum-rushed the exit, and they all died.
Oh.
So I'm like, that's weird. So I started again. And they kept doing that, but that time I was ready. So I fought off the enemy for long enough, and they got through the first area. But then I couldn't get the game to move on to the next area where my robots were. And so this whole boss fight, by dying that first time, I had managed to glitch this boss fight into an unwinnable state. So I exited out to the menu of the game. That didn't get me anywhere, because when I loaded it back up, it was still glitched. And eventually I had to shut the entire game down, go back to the Warawara Plaza, and boot it back up. And that did it. And that also kind of leads into the one other major problem I have. I didn't really have any other big glitchy problems with the game, but the one issue is that you have no direct control over these robots that you're trying to guide through here. You can zap them with one of your tools to get them to go faster, but you can't really tell them, like, go here. And they're not good at navigating the areas. So there were some times where I had, like, a perfect path lined up for them to go to the exit, collect some bonus pickups along the way, and we'd be good, and they just wouldn't go. In my review, there's one line that I had, which was which I'm particularly proud of, in which I said that Underground is, if nothing else, a frustratingly accurate God simulator. Because you can give these creatures a perfect way to salvation, but they probably won't take it. So it's the thing about the game is that the concept and the actual gameplay is fantastic, but the actual programming of the game leaves a bit to be desired. I feel like the whole game could be fixed just by giving your robots a simple go here command. But that's not there. And so it keeps what should be like a freaking masterpiece of the eShop. It keeps it down to like I think I gave it a 7 or a 7.5, which is still good because I really liked the game design. And it's still fun. It's just not as good as it could be. And that is my dissertation on Underground.
I mean, it seems interesting, and I remember hearing the idea of it, but it does sound like it gets frustrating.
Yeah, especially, I mean, as you get into, like, the more complex areas, getting the robots to do what you want, it's essentially you cannot give them more than one option. Like, you have to make it completely obvious to the robots what you want them to do. Like, once you build your path, you should just bulldoze everything else in the level. Yeah, so that they can't get confused. Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, all right, I mean, it's a cool game.
Yeah. But and I think it's also pretty damn expensive, right? It is. It's like $20.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and maybe wait for a sale if you're curious. Well, that's where I'm at with that game.
Yeah. Well, and even like I sent the review off to the PR people and for the game and they were sort of like, "Yeah, we've had a couple reviewers comment on the price and the AI." And so it's like I think they know. And yeah. So hopefully they'll fix it. And then, I mean, if it was fixed, I think it would be maybe even worth the price, but hopefully they'll lower it a little bit.
Yeah. All right, so Addison, I take it you got Mario Golf World Tour from Club Nintendo, right?
No, I actually got it on launch day.
Did you play it back then?
Yes, okay. I did.
So you're revisiting it now. Is this like because of the new 3DS, you're trying old games?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of kept up with that game a lot. It's kind of one of those...
I played a lot of the DLC.
I just pick it up every now and again, and I thought it'd be fun to start doing some tournaments. I posted one on Twitter last night and had a few people join, but I like to do this pretty regularly and I'll publicize it more, maybe get the site Twitter to retweet it and stuff.
I know, but I retweeted it, so hopefully that brought the thunder, that. Man.
I appreciated that. But yeah, it's a really great little golf arcade game. It's a really good golf game, too. Not if you take all the crazy stuff out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a Hot Shots
with
Mario characters.
I mean, I think...
And it works...
Yeah, I think that the problems with that game are like the UI with... Because that's just very confusing as to where to go. But when you get into the meat of the game, like, the courses themselves are fun, and the tournaments are really fun, and those challenges are the shit.
Yeah. And you get really cool stuff from winning. Like, Nintendo's still doing regular tournaments for this game.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you win, like, really neat Nintendo-themed golf gear for your Mii. I know I did a tournament a while back that I... got a complete set of original Game Boy gear, which was really cool.
I think they might be repeating some of those, because I think I got that Game Boy gear around when it launched.
Yeah, that's when I got it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, it was a while back. But if you're into golf, which I am, it's fun to just... It's another one of my baseball watching games where there's nothing really pushing me forward. where I have to be paying attention to it the whole time, so I can multitask, and it's just fun to like play online tournaments.
Yeah,
see how I do against other people.
I might maybe I'll join yours as I'm when the missus is watching Game of Thrones tonight. Maybe I'll play some Mario Golf.
You should. It's pretty fantastic.
But if I'm not playing Mario Golf later, there's a chance I might be playing Etrian Mystery Dungeon. Which is a game that I have been playing, and it's weird because I've never played a mystery dungeon game that I like. And
the Pokemon ones?
I hated the Pokemon ones.
Okay.
Our FN listeners, whenever you hear of James Jones talk about mystery dungeon games and that fucking Pokemon mystery dungeon game, that was my first review for the website, was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, the one that came out in 2008. And James and I tag-teamed that review, and it was, at first, we were mildly positive, and then everything fell apart. And I had, like, PTSD from reviewing that Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game. And I figured now, I love the Etrian Odyssey series. I have liked games that takes elements of roguelikes, like, Spelunky, I think, is very good. So I was curious to go to Etrian Mystery Dungeon and have it where it's, you know, a series that I like in Etrian Odyssey, and see how it's adapted to the Mystery Dungeon formula. And really, the Etrian Odyssey trappings of it are driven forward to a large degree. Because, like, the wrapper for the entire game just feels like an Etrian Odyssey game. Like, it's the same thing where you have different dungeons that you go through, they even have, you know, the really annoyingly hard bosses that you come across that can hunt you down and destroy you. But the one difference with it is that instead of, like, mapping everything, you're playing a mystery dungeon game where you control all the your party in real time, and you're moving through the dungeon as monsters also move through the dungeon, and if you die, you lose. It's not as punishing, because it's not like you go all the way to level one, but you do lose all of your gear that your characters have, and half of your money when you die. But actually, so far, I've avoided dying, knock on wood. Because I get, whenever trouble happens, you have, like, an item that you can use to get out of the dungeon. So I'm just like, well, all right, gonna die, gotta get out, gotta bail.
So how does the battle system work in this game? Is it like a traditional turn-based RPG, or
it probably doesn't help when I'm just like, oh, it's like a mystery dungeon game. But that's what it, I mean, it's like you're it's a, you know, tile based, so you're moving around, and when you get into an area where there's an enemy, then there is like a turn order does display where it'll be like, okay, like this character goes, then the enemy goes, and this character goes, and that character goes.
So it's like a turn-based strategy RPG, kind of?
Yeah, sort of. Because, like, you go through different rooms, and once you get into a room where there is an enemy, then, you know, you can either move one block, or you can attack. And if you move one block, then that guy might get attacked. And when you're in, like, the bulk of the dungeon, you control one character, and you can have a party up to four. And they all control automatically, but you can, like, do things to kind of change what they do and stuff.
Okay, so it's not, like, first person, like it's traditional etching game?
It's not like that. It's like, top-down perspective, for the most part. Okay. It does change a little bit when you, like, hit bosses, because that's when you control every turn. Which helps out a lot, because with bosses, you need to use a lot more strategy. Like, you know, I'll have all my other characters will be farther away, and I'll have, like, the one guy who's more of a tank will be up front and center to attack the boss, whereas, you know, I'll kind of, like, flank him with my magic user, and I'll have my medic kind of healing while my tank goes in for major damage, and then I'll, you know, if I use an electric attack, maybe I'll paralyze him, and then I kind of send everybody in for up-close attacks. I've been enjoying it. I'm about halfway through it, I think, or at least halfway through the main game. I've heard that there's a lot of bonus content. There's also DLC that's out now that's free, and I think there's more DLC on the way. I think the kind of disappointing thing is that I kind of wish it was just an Etrian Odyssey game. Because the Mystery Dungeon stuff, it's not like it's bad. It's just that I keep on playing it, and I'm just like, I wish this was just an Etrian Odyssey game. Which is good, because I still haven't played Persona Q. So I can go back and play that and play an Etrian Odyssey game, or wait until Etrian Odyssey 2 Untold, which is coming out in the summer. There's a lot of Etrian Odyssey games if you really want to play an Etrian Odyssey game.
Yeah, so about that, I mean, I've just played the demo of 4 that they had in eShop. I'm interested in playing one of those games. I'm kind of in between this or Persona Q, which I'm recently gotten to near the end of Persona 4, so I would, and I've played some of 3, so I would get the fan service stuff there. I just don't know if that would probably be the safer bet.
I think, okay, if everything was the same price, I would say go for Persona Q, especially if you have the background with Persona. I mean, I'm also saying this from a spot of having not played Persona Q, but from what I have heard, it's that Persona Q is a very good Etrian Odyssey game with Persona characters. Like, there are definitely, like, some, like, I mean, it's much like Etrian Mystery Dungeon, where I made the comment that it's, like, it's very much an Etrian Odyssey game, which, with some Mystery Dungeon trappings. From what I've heard about Persona Q, it's very much an Etrian Odyssey game with some, you know, Persona trappings. Right. However, I think that Persona Q is still like $50.
It's available now on Gamefly, so that's where I'd be getting either of these from. So.
I think if price were not an issue, get Persona Q. But I think that starting tomorrow or something, or maybe even right now, or every other month, because that's how Atlas rolls, you can get like Etrian Odyssey 4, which I think would probably be the best one to go into, for like $15.
Oh, wow.
And Etrian Odyssey Untold, which is the other one that's available, that's good, but I personally like 4 a lot more. Etrian Odyssey Untold introduces a concept called Grimmar Stones that I just didn't really enjoy. Apparently the sequel, which, I mean, these are both remakes of DS games. Apparently the sequel that's coming out over the summer makes those Grimmar Stones better, but Etrian Odyssey 4 does not have that nonsense. I'd love Etrian Odyssey 4. It's probably one of my favorite games on 3DS. Not being by Nintendo, cool. Because I think if I look at my list of favorite 3DS games, it's riddled with Nintendo games, but Etrian Odyssey 4 would be at the top of that third-party list.
Yeah, Atlas is pretty much the big third-party on Nintendo consoles right now.
I mean, they have... By the summer, they will have put out 4 big games. I mean, they have Etrian Mystery Dungeon, which is already out. They have Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker, which is out in May. They have, what was that other thing? Attack on Titan is coming out. That's eShop only. And then you have Etrian Odyssey 2. And I think there's even another one probably coming out in the fall. I forget. I'm probably missing one. Stella Glow is another one, which I don't really know much about that game other than that exists. But yeah, that's Etrian Mystery Dungeon. I enjoy it, but I think after playing this, I might just go and play Persona Q finally. So maybe I'll talk about that on a later segment of this very show. And
word.
That will do us for this segment of new What You've Been Playing nonsense. On behalf of John, Addison, and myself, thank you for listening. If you have any comments about what you heard, please email connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We love your feedback. If you give us good feedback, maybe we'll even have a listener mail segment. And we all know how you all love listener mail segments. They're the best. So thanks for listening. Bye.
Toodles.
Bye. And that's it for Connectivity this week. I just wanted to jump in here at the end and let everyone know that Connectivity is going to be moving to a bi-weekly schedule for the time being.
It may eventually go back to being a weekly show, but for now we have decided to move it to a bi-weekly schedule. If you have any questions or queries, please email connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot. What are you doing? It's the end of the show. You have to do it next time.
But
I'm Banjo.